Today's February 12th, 2019, and this is episode 84 of the Birdland BS Podcast. On today's show, we're going to be talking about the passing of a legend in Birdland. We're going to take an early dive into the O's starting rotation. Ryan Shamble joins the show to break down the Terps. What's his take on this year's class? And the men's basketball team rebounds. Stay tuned.
So let's take it to the Birdland. That Baltimore home flavor is coming firsthand. Fred, Scott, and Ryan, tell them the word, man. Mixing a little BS to make it work, man. Boards, they got it. Want excitement, the topic. Make sure when they toss you the ball, you don't drop it. With all that swag, you're gonna listen regardless. Here comes the pitch, so it's time to get it started. It's Birdland BS.
What's up, BSers?
What is up?
It's Fred and Scott, episode 84 of the Birdland BS Podcast. Got a different kind of show for you in store. A week without NFL and Ravens talk. Well, maybe not completely without NFL talk. Maybe a few little tidbits in the two-minute warning. But a totally different show is we're going to cover the Orioles and cover the Terps. We got a lot of things to talk about. We got a special guest joining us on the show, Ryan Shamble, super fan, Terps and Birdland BS.
That he is, both.
Yeah, he's a good guy, and he knows everything there is to know about Maryland, the university, the athletic program.
He's a Maryland encyclopedia.
Yeah, man. We had a chance to go to a game with him earlier this year. It was actually the Maryland versus Ohio State football game, and what was the probably, in my opinion, the best football game, football game of the year. I got to go on basically a campus tour with Ryan. So this guy knows the university like the back of his hand. So make sure if you're a Terps fan, you stay tuned for that segment. It'll be a lot of fun.
Yeah, man, this is going to be a great show for everybody moving forward. I'm excited. We're getting into baseball season.
Yeah, man. Before we get too far in anything, I want to remind you guys, if you're in the market to buy or sell a home, do you want someone that's going to go to bat for you? Go see our guy, John Scheffernacker over at Cummings & Co. Realtors. John's been in the business for 4 years now and is dedicated to getting you the best deal possible. He's always available to take your call anytime, day or night. For you Oreo fans out there, you know him as the guy with the orange button down, the black tie, and the backwards hat and sunglasses sitting behind dugout at Camden Yards. Give John a call today, 443-604-6298.
Yeah, you guys hear me say it every week, in and out. John is really there for all of his clients. He helped us out, got us in the house that we wanted to get into, and really is taking care of us afterwards with all of his client events that he's always having. He actually just did one. I wasn't able to attend because I had to work. He had it when I was working. He treated everybody to one of the Lego movies. They love doing that. It's a family affair. So it was awesome. He had his logo up there on the screen. Kind of pretty cool to see.
That is cool.
So it's awesome. He takes care of everybody afterwards and during, you know, the process as well. So if you're looking to buy or sell a home, either one, and you're in the Maryland, Delaware, PA, you know, in this vicinity, give John a call today. He helps people out in all those different areas. So make sure you give him a call at 443-604-6298 or email him at johnscheffa@gmail.com. That's johnscheffa.com. All of his information is in all of our links. It's down here in the corner of the video screen. If you're watching on any of our social media sites, make sure you hit him up immediately. I think actually our guest has contacted him.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Kind of cool for him.
Absolutely.
So don't forget to mention when you do call John or email John, let him know Birdland BS is the one that sent you.
All right, Scott, let's talk some Orioles baseball. Unfortunately, we got to touch a subject that happened right after last week's show. The passing of a legend in Birdland, Frank Robinson, passed away at the age of 83.
83, yeah. I know he's suffering from the story that I read was that he'd been suffering from a little bit of bone cancer at some point. Yeah. So just really sad to hear, you know, passing of a true legend. It's really expected that the Orioles will wear a number 20 patch this year and will honor Frank all throughout the year with different things. I look forward in a weird way to opening day to see how they honor him. Yeah. He did so much for this franchise and so much as a player and so much as for baseball itself that I'm excited to see what they do because I think they will really truly honor Frank in a great way.
Yeah, if there's something that you can definitely say about this organization is they do a very good job of remembering their past heroes and remembering those that have given to this organization and to this city. I will say this, though, about Frank. I think Frank is probably, in my opinion, the most underrated superstar or legend, however you want to classify him, really in baseball history.
I'll second that.
This is a guy that, like, when you talk about the greats that have kind of come through the games, you don't really hear Frank's name mentioned. You hear it a lot locally, obviously, because of the local ties. But on a national level, you just don't hear Frank's name mentioned. And this is a guy that when he retired, he was third in Major League history in career home runs.
Yeah.
I think now he sits 10th.
10th.
Yeah, he sits 10th now. Obviously, you know, the steroid era and all the greats that have kind of come along through them have inflated some home run numbers. But this is a guy that was right up there with, you know, Babe Ruth, with Hank Aaron, with Willie Mays, you know, some of the greatest players to ever play this game. And I feel like historians just don't do him enough justice.
No, I don't think they do. You know, he played for a long time. Played up until I think he was 39 or 40.
Right.
You know, I think Fred, you got to see him play, right? I mean, you're that old. I mean, it's getting in there.
Watch where you're going, there, Scott. I'm old. Kidding. I'm not that damn old.
I'm just kidding. We both never really got to see Frank play, and it's one of those things that I, as a baseball purist, you've heard me call myself that on multiple occasions. You've called me that name. You know, I don't appreciate it. but we both never got to watch him. But for me, in the words of the great Bambino, the salt in the SWAT from the Sandlot, there's heroes and there's legends. Heroes get remembered, but legends never die. And in Baltimore, that is pride and true. Yeah. Here with Frank Robinson, as far as I'm concerned. I know some people were questioning at FanFest, actually, you know, why hadn't he been involved with the team? Now I think we know why now, because his health had been declining. Apparently, it's really escalated over the past few weeks.
Right.
With I think the story that I read again was that it was bone cancer situation, that he'd been fighting that,
right.
And that kind of made things worse. But
even above and beyond that, just knowing what I do know about Frank is Frank was never a me guy. He was never a media guy. He never wanted the attention. He was always a team guy. And this guy was about as hard-nosed gets as far as baseball players and managers and just truly passionate about what he did day in and day out on that baseball field. You know, there was a story I heard today, actually. I was coming home from work and I was listening to 105.7 The Fan. I'm not sure who they were interviewing today, but I thought it was kind of a cool story. There was a game where Frank had hit a ground ball in the infield and maybe he didn't run it out as hard as he normally would. And if he would have ran it out, he probably would have beaten it out. And, you know, he went back to the dugout and not a whole lot of people said much to him because it was so unlike Frank and out of his character.
Right.
But after the game, what I thought was really cool was, you know, he left a note on Earl Weaver's door apologizing and saying how embarrassed he was for his lack of effort and that it would never happen again. And you know what else he did I thought was kind of cool is he left two $100 bills taped to that note, basically fining himself. You know, $100, $200 back then was a decent amount of money.
You and I were talking about this. You know, there's a lot of clout, and we're going to talk about it in the 2-minute warning with the contracts that are going on right now. And I wanted to look it up, and I said, some of the greats like Frank and Brooks, you know, guys that are perennial Hall of Famers year in, year out, no matter what era they play in.
Right.
They would be a perennial Hall of Famer. And so I started kind of looking at the numbers, and I thought this was really interesting. With all of these stats in his first year with the O's, Frank was paid just $64,000 that year.
It's crazy.
In 2018 money, with adjustments and, you know, adjusting for inflation, that's $148,000.
Wow.
I'm sorry, $848,000. I have a mistype, a typo there. $848,000. But still, with today's
not even league minimum.
He came over from Cincinnati and won the Triple Crown in that first year. A Triple Crown guy getting paid $845,000, $848,000.
This is a guy
in this day and age.
To James's point, he brought it up a second ago. This is a guy that won MVPs in both leagues.
Yeah. I mean, it's crazy. And at the most Frank was ever paid, $160,000 by the California Angels in 73 and 74. That equates to $880,000.
Yeah.
That's great to think of those numbers and think where it's evolved from and where it's gone to. You know, it's just crazy to look at those numbers. I mean, you got to look at the stats that he put up.
Yeah, I mean, some of these numbers, like we talk about, again, I just think he doesn't get credited enough for how great of a baseball player he was. He's 28th all-time in at-bats with 10,006. He's 35th all-time in hits with 2,943. And, you know, what's key about that is when people asked him about, like, the 3,000 mark and trying to go after the 3,000 mark, he could care less. No. About that mark. He, you know, his career, his body of work spoke for itself.
And he was a team guy. He wanted exactly. to do what was right by the team. And that shows you with the whole $200 for his effort. That just shows you what type of guy he was. I mean, he was so crucial. And 528 doubles, he's 43rd career.
Yeah.
For a guy set Frank's size in that time period, that's a lot of doubles.
And Frank was like, you know, obviously things were totally different back then with the way people worked out and the way that they got themselves in shape and all that kind of stuff. But everything I ever heard about Frank, and the one time I did meet Frank, I got to shake his hand at a meeting, and this guy's hands were huge and so strong. He had that, like, country strength. You know yeah. what I mean? Like, his forearms were huge. Even when I met him, it was probably I was in my early 20s. I was probably like 21 or 22. So that's going back about 15 years ago. So he was still in his late 60s at that point. And this guy was as strong as an ox
right.
even then. Yeah, it just
goes to show you, you know, the effort that these guys put in. I mean, like I said, you know, we talked about his power with 10th in home runs. RBIs, he's ninth in career RBIs, 1,812. Ninth. Yeah. And that's with the steroid era and all that ish. That just goes to show you how productive of a player he was. I mean, not only are we talking MVPs, we're talking multiple triple crowns that he right. had in his career. The triple crown nowadays is an ungodly feat.
Right.
I mean, if I think the closest guy to come to it was Mookie Betts. Did Mookie Betts actually get it? I think he did.
I can't remember.
I'd have to look that up. But Mookie Betts is the closest, and you think about that.
Right.
Mookie Betts is probably the best all-around player. By the way, did you see his all-around athlete? He's won like PBR,
yeah.
the bowling and all that right. stuff as well.
PBA, yeah, he's pretty good. He's an immense athlete,
right.
Nonetheless. But the thing that you got to remember about Frank is not only was his career as a baseball player, but he also had a very long career as a manager. Now, granted, he didn't have the most success when you just look at wins and losses. I mean, he's a little under 500 for his career. He was 1,065 for 1,176. But, I mean, he put 16 years of his life as a manager
yeah.
in baseball. I mean, this guy, he lived, breathed, ate, and slept baseball.
You can't ignore it. I mean, he had during a 30-year span, it was the 16 years. He was managing up until 13 years ago.
Right.
You know, so, and he was with the Nats. One of the cool stories I remember not as an Oriole for Frank, but as a Nationals manager was, do you remember when he had the 40-second stare down or almost minute stare down?
Oh my God. Umpire? Yeah. It was so awkward.
They came back.
I forgot all about that.
Fox or something. And, like, the Fox guys are like, We got to show this because he just stared him down. And what was crazy was Frank was blinking and the umpire wasn't blinking, but he still made the umpire look away first.
Yeah, Frank had daggers, boy. He was not going to let up on that. Yeah, I remember that. It was crazy.
He was a hard-nosed guy. He was a hard-nosed player. He was a hard-nosed, manager in those senses. He was once quoted as saying, "Pitchers did me a favor when they knocked me down. It made me more determined. I wouldn't let a pitcher get me out. They say you can't hit if you're on your back, but I didn't get on my back. I got back up."
Yeah.
And that just goes to show he was. And when you look at Frank and you saw Frank talk, Frank, as much as I love Frank, there wasn't a smile on his face very much, and it's because he took his craft seriously.
He was very serious, and he was one of those guys too that didn't believe in the whole camaraderie before a game. Like, I was listening to a bunch of people talk the other day about Frank, and one of the things that he used to get on guys about was, the relationship that players had with other players on other teams, and they're going up to these guys and high fiving and hugging before games. Frank wasn't about that. No. he was a soft-hearted guy off the field and a very warm kind of guy off the field. But when it came to between those lines and when it came to game day, you were the opponent.
Yeah.
And he was going to do everything he could to beat you that day. After the game, cool, we can talk. during that game, during that 4-hour stretch, It was business.
It was. He was all business. Like I said, just as an Orioles manager, he 475 in his career. He was 447 as an Orioles manager, 230 and 285. So he didn't have a winning record as a manager with the Orioles. But one stat I did find interesting, as hard-nosed as he was, in the 16 years, only 28 ejections. About how hard-nosed he was, I was surprised by that interesting stat. I figured he would have more ejections, but I guess he just stared down the umpire. And
I mean, that's almost two up. A year. It's not heavy, Buck heavy, but
more than that.
Really?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
I don't know. I guess I'd have to go look at the stats, but well, we wanted to make sure that we talked about this because this was something that for us being Oriole fans, want to show our appreciation for Frank and all his contributions that he made to this organization, to the fan base, and to Major League Baseball.
And if you guys didn't check out some of the pictures, Fred found one and put it up here in the corner on social media. And our buddy Ryan sent us one as well. People went out to the statue out at Camden Yards, putting out flowers. They put out a wreath, very nice of the Orioles to do that. I think our buddy Ryan even said there was a natty bow out there for him.
That's right.
Which a nice little nod by the fans. I think it's like I said. I really look forward to how they honor him this year because I think they're going to do a great job doing.
Yeah, if you get a chance, go stop down at the stadium, see the statue. If you are familiar with where Memorial Stadium used to be on 33rd Street, there's a YMCA that's there now, and there's a Ripken, I think it's Ripken Jr. Baseball field that's there, and there's still the flag from when Frank Robinson hit the ball out of Memorial Stadium, the only player to ever hit the ball out of Memorial Stadium. They marked where that ball landed with a flag, and simply the flag is an orange and black flag, and all it says is "here." And that flag still stands, flying at half mast now. So if you get a chance, if you're down in the city, stop by. It's cool.
Great chance to honor. Well, let's kind of move to some more happy news.
Well, before we do, man, what are we drinking on today, Scott?
Oh, we're drinking some good stuff, man.
Tell us about it. What's the brew of the week?
This week's brew of the week from Liquor Stop. Make sure you go ask Jerry, about this. We were up there. We saw him yesterday. We trudged up there in the bad weather to get your brew of the week this week. So this week is Alecraft Brewery's Recalcitrant, is how I believe it is said. It's a nod to a New England style double IPA. Now, double IPA for a lot of people, Fred, it's very intimidating because IPAs are very hoppy as it is. They're very strong, have a pungent. They have a floral note, but it's that very strong bitter taste that you get. We don't get that with this thing.
No, we really don't.
It's another hazy IPA. It's not as harsh on the hops as most IPAs. Like I said, it has a kind of a distinctive citrus note. I think you had it. What was the description you had that it kind of tasted like to you?
It's similar to Blue Moon in a lot of ways, but without the, you know, well, with a little extra bite on the back end. That familiar bite that you get to an IPA, it has that on the back end. But it has the smoothness, the, like I said, the citrus flavors of Blue Moon. So if you're a Blue Moon fan, my buddy Gene, he's a huge Blue Moon fan. Check it out. Definitely good stuff. And 8.3%.
Be careful. This thing will sneak up on you.
Yeah, 8.3%. It will definitely sneak up on you. So make sure you drink responsibly.
Exactly.
Enjoy. So go see our guy Jerry and their crew up there at the liquor stop on Conowingo Road in Bel Air. Tell them the Birdland BS sent you so you get your 10% off. All right, Scott. Let's shift gears with the Orioles a little bit here. We haven't had a chance really to talk much about the roster, and a lot of that has to do with there hasn't been a whole lot to talk about with the roster.
No.
There hasn't been a whole lot of news, any signings or anything. There was a signing over the last week with Nate Karns coming aboard as a potential starting pitching option. So what I'd like to do is just kind of let's talk a little bit about the starting rotation.
Okay.
Let's take a look at what our ideas or what our suggestions would be for maybe what this starting five rotation would look at. And I'll let you start.
Yeah, I was going to say, let me start this off here. I think it goes without saying at this point, unless something crazy happens in spring training, I think Dylan Bundy is our number one starter. He's our opening day starter for the Orioles. Last year, he had an 8-16 record. He's 31-31 in his career. 4.63 career ERA. Last year, he struggled. He started really well with like a 2.5 ERA and then fell off in the second half, 5.45 ERA. His whip last year, 1.41. His career whip, though, 1.32. He is actually second in career whip on the Orioles staff.
Let's remind folks what your bold prediction was last year.
Last year, beginning of the year, I said I thought he was going to have a Cy Young year and really potentially have a strong go at the Cy Young.
And man, for the first month and a half, 2 months of the season, I really thought Scott knows something. He's on to it.
Really, June, July, you know, I still say it was that one game that he wound up having to run the bases. I think that kind of may have happened there. Even you kind of after that game were like, he was off after that.
Yeah.
Something was weird was going on. So, but prior to last year, we got to remember Dylan Bundy was 23-15.
Yeah.
You know, not too bad. He's not, you know, it's way above 500, which is where we want him to be. Right. But I think you look for him to have a good solid bounce back year, despite probably not getting a lot of run production. But who knows what this team can do as far as, you know, behind him, we're going to see a little bit more, you know, less power bats and a little bit more small ball type play.
With Dylan Bundy specifically, do you think the injury is a thing of the past now and that we can say that he's fully healthy and fully recovered from that?
God, I sure hope so.
Yeah, man. I sure hope so. I don't want there to be any other excuses for this kid. I mean, look, he was a number one overall draft pick, and this was a kid, number one overall draft pick for us, and this was a kid that came out of high school with a lot of praise. I mean, Roger Clemens was singing this guy's praise as one of the best high school pitchers he had ever seen. And, you know, unfortunately, injuries happen. This is a kid that I don't know if you got to see him, but I mean, some of his workout videos that he posted when he was in high school, this kid was about as good a shape as you could possibly be for a high school kid.
Yeah.
But yet that doesn't save you from the injury bug. But, you know, again, even with the injury, he was still able to make it to the major leagues, still have a pretty productive couple of years. Like you said, he hit the speed bump last year. Hopefully, he can get over that.
Brady on Facebook is making his bold prediction. Brady, I sure as hell hope so.
Man, I'm with you, Brady. I hope so, brother.
18 wins for Bundy this year.
I'd love to see that, man. Look, honestly, for me, if he wins 15 games or more with this roster, I think that's a win. I think that's a huge win. I mean, yes, he's going to be more than likely our number one starter going into the year, but just looking at this team,
I'll take, in all honesty, I'll take a minimum of 10 wins. I'll take a minimum of 10 wins with this team and what we're expected to
I'd
see.
I'd expect more out of my number one than 10.
I do, but I am concerned a little bit about run production. And
he doesn't have
run production, he struggled. So he had 8 last year. I'll take an improvement of 10 this year. I love to see 15. I would love to see it.
Well, a guy that last year we signed kind of late, Andrew Cashner, came over from the National League, pitched pretty well in his 5-year stint with the Padres to a 3.67 ERA. He was a guy that I was kind of excited about. I thought he was an under-the-radar kind of signing. Really, I mean, he had spurts where he looked good, but just couldn't put together a complete game.
No.
He might put together 2 or 3 innings, but then he'd fall apart. Finished the year 4-15, had a 5.29 ERA. That's obviously a run and a half almost higher than his career ERA of 4.
Yeah.
His whip last year, 1.58, little bit of a tick up from his career whip at 1.358. What do we need to see from Andrew to right the ship with him?
He needs a little bit more command, and this kind of goes back to the Sucre conversation that we talked about last week. You need a veteran catcher that can really help guys like Cashner and Cobb and Bundy really settle in at this point and really develop the fastball that he does have. Location, location, location. He needs to lock down his location like he did when he was with the Padres. I mean, when you look at him with his Padres, he had a 3.67 ERA and 1.27 whip with the Padres over 5 years. He can be a dominant style pitcher. In all reality, he has the potential to be a number one style starter. On most other teams, he's going to be a number two. He has the potential to be a number one starter for the Orioles.
He's a guy that I expected to get a little bit more ground ball production out of because he likes to keep the ball low in the zone, and he doesn't really hit a whole lot of bats solid.
He struggled with that last year.
Yeah, he struggled with that, couldn't get the ball down, and I think that's obviously a big part of why we saw the uptick in the ERA. Also, I did expect there to be some inflation coming over from a large stadium like San Diego to the small stadium in the AL East in Baltimore. I would have been happy with a low 4 ERA. So if he can get back to that, I think that's a productive number 2 out of Andrew Cashner.
I mean, I would agree. I think, and then you got to turn to your number 3 guy who I think this year, you know, comes in late last year, really struggles. Alex Cobb, 5-15 record last year. Him and Cashner right on the same boat there. He did have a little bit lower ERA in a 4.9 ERA last year with a 1.41 whip. But both of those, well above his normal. He has a career 3.75 ERA pitcher and a career 1.2 whip. Career-wise, he is your number one starter if you're looking at him on paper.
Yeah.
The problem is he struggled so much last year that Camden Yards, as we've talked about, is not a pitcher-friendly park. A lot of pitchers don't like coming here because
But we can't use that excuse.
No, you can't use it, but you do have to kind of think about it. You need somebody, and that's why I'm excited about this staff to come in and hopefully turn that mentality around with these guys. But I do look for a bounce back year out of Cobb.
The thing with Cobb is, and what I really liked about the signing with him was his experience in the AL East, coming over from Tampa Bay. Right. He pitched very well in the division, familiar with the lineups and all of that, so I was excited about it. I think the biggest downfall for Alex Cobb was that he didn't get into camp until very late, didn't have a whole lot of time really to kind of get up to game speed. They tried to give him a couple of weeks of extended spring training, but really nothing surplants actually pitching in a game.
Nothing fully clicked there.
No, and I mean, it just took him a while to kind of get things going, and then it becomes mental at that point. You know, when you haven't pitched well for weeks on weeks on months.
Am I going to get over this?
Yeah, it becomes a mental hurdle. I think if he comes in, he can stay healthy. He has a full spring training behind him. He can get back to being the Alex Cobb that we paid.
I would agree. I would agree with that. I think he's got great potential here. But you were talking about the pickup guy that we got.
Yeah, so we've got those are, I think we both agree, those are without locked. A doubt are locked at, you know, top three spots in the rotation.
You can move these guys around in that
a little
order.
Bit. You can move them around a little bit, yeah. But I think we all agree that that's a lock for the top three positions. The next two positions, it's a juggle. It's really going to be who comes in and shows that they can do the job in spring.
And who knows? It could be one, it could be two, it could be three.
Right.
We don't know at this point.
Nate Karns is the guy that they just picked up, and they signed him from Kansas City. A guy that's coming off of an injury, a pretty severe injury that kept him out all of 2017. And that's kind of the thing that's hampered this kid through his entire career. But when you just look at the stuff, this kid is a high strikeout kind of guy, which I like. He doesn't walk a whole lot of guys, which I like. He hasn't had a whole lot of major league experience. Obviously, he's 16-11 on his career. He's got a 4.37 ERA. On most other teams, this kid's probably a number five or maybe even a stretch long man, that kind of thing.
I would agree with that.
But this is a kid that at $800,000 on a roster that really doesn't have a whole lot of options could really take advantage of this opportunity, and we might see a dumpster dive kind of signing that works out well for the Orioles.
I mean, he's on a one-year $800,000 deal, you know. So yeah, I mean, this could be that we could benefit from his bounce back year if he starts out a strong solid. He may become trade bait. You know, somebody that's looking to just get that last little piece in a fifth man that's being strong on a strong team. It's possible, you know, as long as he develops himself and really shows what he is capable of. Another guy that I think had a chance last year to show a little bit of himself that didn't wind up working out in a good way is David Hess, man.
Yeah, he was another kid that came up, and he had some ups, he had some downs, and the downs were really, really bad.
He went 3-10, man.
Yeah, his numbers, I think, are a bit skewed. He didn't get a whole lot of run production. We've had this debate on previous shows like going into last year. I don't really take a whole lot in wins and losses. What I look at mainly is going to look at his ERA and his WHIP. And his ERA at 4.88, again, in the American League East, as a number five,
he's number five pushing long man.
Yeah, I'll take a 4.5 to 4.8 ERA out of my number five guy if that's the role he fits in.
But you know what I won't take out of a guy that you're trying to pin as your starter and say that he has the starter potential is a guy that pitches 103 innings and throws 37 walks and 22 home runs.
Yeah. Got to clean it up for sure.
He has to clean it up. And I'm going to talk about another guy here in a minute who actually has worse but similar numbers, but has been never given the chance that David Hess has. And I'd be curious to see what he does if he's given that chance. I'm going to go over that here in a minute. But that is one concern with David Hess that some people are pinning him as a number five starter. I don't know that he's ready. I don't think he's developed his fastball and his location enough. Look, I love the mentality of Brocale, the pitching coach, coming into this saying, you don't need six pitches. You can get guys out with two pitches. You know, that's really all you need is two pitches, something a little off speed and a fastball that you can maybe adjust the speed on it. That's what David Hess needs to go back to. He needs to go back to two pitches and stop trying to get fancy and walk in so many guys. I mean, God, it's a guy every other inning almost.
Yeah, I think the biggest problem that I saw out of David Hess was he was getting behind early in a lot of counts.
I'll agree with
that. And trying to work his way back into the count. And when he did, he caught too much of the plate and he ended up paying for it. And that's where he ended up giving up a lot of his home runs. If he can come out and just change the approach, maybe be a little bit more aggressive early in the counts, I think we'll see an improvement from David Hess. Look, the thing with it is there aren't a whole lot of arms that are beating down the door to try to come up and take this roster spot and this rotation spot. So unless the Orioles go out and bring in some free agent arms, David Hess is one of the guys definitely factored in for the role.
Doubling back to the free agent arms and Nate Carnes, we have a few people chiming on YouTube saying that was a low risk, high reward.
Exactly.
Connor says he loves the signing. SCG says it's a low risk, high reward. Ernesto was chiming in, I think in reference to Cobb and Cashner, saying they're talking exactly what we were saying about they can't be their excuse all season with the stadium. But so one guy that I think you brought up to me earlier was Yeffrey Ramirez.
Yeah, Yeffrey Ramirez, again, another guy, didn't really impress me too much. He did well in the minor league levels, but when the little bit of time that we saw him up here at the major league level, he went 1-8, he had a 5.92 ERA, a 1.531 a WHIP. Not impressive numbers, but again, a kid that's been productive in the minor leagues, how much of it was nerves trying to get his first, you know, opportunity at the major league level. Right. Again, I think he'll be one of the guys that's in consideration for a starting role, but not a guy that I'm super excited about. I know you have a guy that was a familiar bullpen arm that you would like to see get a shot.
Look, I think he deserved a shot last year, and it's Miguel Castro. Miguel Castro did, I think he did a decent job in spring training as much as they were asking. And I blame Buck. If I'm being honest with this, this is one reason that I hate that Buck was so damn loyal to his guys, was that he wasn't willing to give guys a chance. I mean, look, for God's sakes, how long were you calling for Cedric Mullins and that long to get him up? I mean, even Adam Jones was calling for Cedric Mullins and it still took them a while to call him up. But I think Miguel Castro
has... Damn, Buck, for not listening to me sooner.
I know, right? Miguel Castro, career-wise, he's got a 4.18 ERA. Next to Cashner, that's the best career ERA you've got.
Yeah.
Now, it's a little bit different spectrum as far as how much is there. But last year, through 185 innings pitched, a 3.96 ERA. Next to Cobb, that's the lowest ERA that the Orioles saw all year from anybody.
Right.
When you look at that, now I said there was a guy that I was going to bring up that had worse numbers than David Hess. In 185 innings pitch, Castro's a little wild. 93 walks.
That was going to be my comeback with this, is that, you know, as much as he has...
In his career, by the way, 93 walks.
As much as he has the stuff to be a potential starter, he's just so wildly inconsistent. But when he's on, he's on.
But if this pitching staff can get with him and work with him on those things and develop him, something that we have always said, you and I have said this to minor leagues, major leagues, we have never been able to develop. I want to see Brocale develop a guy like Miguel Castro, because while he had 93 walks and 24 home runs in his career, given up in his career in 185 innings pitched, 50 of those walks came last year. It was bad.
Yeah, real bad.
But think about that. He gave up 50 walks and only let up less than 4 runs on average. I'm looking at that saying, while the guy let guys get on base,
he limited the damage.
He actually limited the damage, and he was able to actually almost pitch better when he had a guy on base. It was weird.
Yeah.
When you think about it, he would get a guy on first, and it would be like four straight balls. The next guy, 3 strikes. You're out. Like, it was crazy.
Well, he definitely deserves a shot. I mean, like I said, there really aren't a whole lot of guys that are beating down the door. I wish that I could say Hunter Harvey was beating down the door, but this kid, every time I blink, tears another something in his shoulder. Something
damn it,
goes
wrong. What the hell, man?
He's about as fragile as they come. Sucks. I mean, that kid had all the potential in the world, and I hope he can get it together, and hopefully he can rehab and get back and potentially get into this rotation. But we'll see.
I know we had Connor chime in on YouTube. Said, correct me if I'm wrong, Arahu got hurt last year, but he thinks he could see Arahu play replacing Castro. In that role. I agree with that.
I agree with that too.
But I think Castro has to make that leap in order for that to happen. If not, I think Castro is your most valuable long man at that point, unless you're going to put Carnes in that role, which I just don't see at this point.
Scott, it's time for a social media shout out, my friend.
Let's go to social media. We're going to chime in on Facebook. We've had Connor chiming in. We appreciate it, man. He did say Castro throws some heat. Castro is a... You know who Castro reminds me of? Castro reminds me of Pedro Strop. He throws so hard his hat turns. that's how hard he can actually throw. We've had SCG, our buddy Sonny over at SCG Sports chiming in. Our boy Steve chiming in. Ernesto chiming in. Appreciate it on YouTube. On the Twitterverse. Twitterverse has been a little bit quiet tonight. Everybody apparently just not... there's been plenty of people watching, but nobody really wanted to comment here. On Facebook, we have plenty of people chiming in. Paul Jackson says Paul Jackson is watching. We appreciate that, Paul.
What's going on, Paul?
Brady, James, first man in, last man out, as usual. Sharing Sherry. She did say, happy news, happy brews.
I love it. Trish, I see you. Appreciate you tuning in. Becca, I see you. Margaret, appreciate you guys tuning in for sure. Anybody we missed there on Facebook?
Kaylee. And Kaylee has a beautiful lead in here.
Okay.
A beautiful lead in. She says, Ryan Schammel should be up soon.
Oh, man. That's hilarious. Speaking of social media, Ryan Schammel's a guy that has been missing from our social media list. That's because we have him as a special guest on our show this week. So joining us now from his home in beautiful, what is it? Bully's Quarters, right? Guess that's what it's called. Ryan Schammel, what's going on, man? Appreciate you being on the show, brother.
I appreciate you and thank my wife for the beautiful lead-in.
and apparently, I'm assuming you know Kim Donald because she says she can't wait for you either.
Yep, I know most of the people you named off.
Oh, man, that's great. All right, Ryan. So to kind of fill in everybody to let you let everybody out there know a little bit about you, you're obviously a huge Terps fan. You're our biggest fan that chimes in every single week about the Terps with all your takes. I know it's your favorite segment. So what makes you feel so connected to the Terps more so than other sports that we cover, man?
I just think the Terps are the most honest sportshood. I mean, they're for the state. They're not for the city of Baltimore. They can't leave in Mayflower vans in the middle of the night. They're going to be here forever.
Right.
And I've loved supporting them for the last 20 years.
Come on, Ryan. You're telling me you can't get like 1,000 Mayflower vans in here and move the entire university?
I think it would at least move somewhere else in the state. I don't think they're
going to leave. That's funny. So, yeah, I mean, we talked about you a little bit earlier. You're a season ticket holder, like you said, for the last 20 years. I know that's kind of, you know, I went to the game with you at Ohio State. It was a whole family affair. How did that whole family season ticket tradition kind of come about, man?
Yeah, they all started back when kids played outside. I was outside.
I forgot playing. About those days.
Yeah, I mean, like a 12-year-old boy, and came back home and found my mother had turned off the vacuum, was sitting in front of the TV by herself watching college football.
That's awesome.
I was very confused by this, and I asked her, "What are you doing?" And she's like, come here, you got to see this. The original Lamar effect got my mother to watch the TV. She was watching Michael Vick at Virginia Tech, who was a man versus boys, and she had never seen a quarterback run before. So it made the game exciting for her.
I don't think the hashtag Vic effect ever really.
No, it didn't. But she's an alumni of the University of Maryland, and I was a big fan just as a kid. So she got us a single game ticket that year to go see a game, and we really enjoyed it. We were in the nosebleeds, could see the Washington Monument. And the next year we bought season tickets, and we happened to get lucky. They moved the band. So we got great seats that I'm never letting go.
Oh, man, that's awesome. All the right reasons to be a super fan. That's great.
Where are your seats, by the way?
We're on second great. 7, the 35-yard line.
Doesn't get any better. It doesn't get any better, man. They're great. And if you want to be like Ryan and you want to be uber annoying, you could get right in the other team's ear. It's super great. They are awesome seats,
man. I got to get to a game with you this year because I
open invite to all the games for both of you.
I will happily appreciate take you it, on man. That, man.
And I know, you know, going to the game with you and your wife and your family and everything, I see you obviously you guys are passing on the tradition to your two beautiful twins that you guys have there. They were like, I think the thing that impressed me the most, those kids were so well behaved at that game, man. I don't know how you do it.
It'll be a test. I'm sure it's going to get worse here shortly before it gets better.
Mine are a little older than you, so I know you're feeling me. But let's jump into some football here. You know, with Loxley really coming aboard, and let's just be honest here, man. He's trying to fix a sinking ship at this point. And he's done an okay job. He's brought on some staff that a lot of people were surprised by some of the names. Some people don't know some of these names. I know you know a lot of these guys. Give us a few of the coaches that you like on his staff and some of his hires that you think really can make an impact on this team.
Yeah, first of all, I'd like to just address that. I think that a lot of people are disappointed in the names because of the media leaking names too early. People weren't locked in yet, and they're throwing names out there. So now they're comparing the two. If you had this staff in a vacuum, I think people would be really excited about it.
I agree.
So first off, the offensive coordinator, this is Scotty Montgomery. He has ties. He was ECU head coach, Eastern Carolina University. He also was a wide receiver coach for the Steelers. So it's a Tomlin connection. As we'll get to later, we got a nice Tomlin addition to our team.
What do you expect out of this kid, out of this guy? Do you think he's going to be more of a run first or pass first kind of offensive coordinator?
So, I mean, the offensive coordinator, which originally was rumored, was obviously Josh Gattis out of Alabama. So Locksley was trying to bring over his people and his scheme. So I honestly think he's just ahead to run Locksley's system.
Got it.
We're going to see the Alabama system through and through. And this is a guy that's gonna follow through with that.
That's an interesting take, considering how well that system has really, let's be honest, dominated for Alabama.
Yeah, we're not going to have straight five stars across the board, so we'll have to see how it goes with a little bit less there. But it was a very dominant system, and their best offensive performance, I think, ever, definitely in the recent Saban years.
For sure. I don't know, another guy you were pretty excited about, we had talked off the air, the new tight ends coach. Tell us a little bit about him.
Yeah, Mike Miller. So again, another rumored Alabama coach, because the media can't keep their mouth shut, was going to be Butch Jones. So Butch Jones ended up staying at Alabama after Alabama lost all their offensive staff to everybody across the country, thanks to Locksley's offense. And Mike Miller was a graduate assistant there, ended up being his second choice. So he was a graduate assistant at Alabama, played quarterback at UAB, long history of quarterbacks doing really well in the coaching ranks.
Right.
This will be his first on the field position, but if we get a young up and comer that we can keep a few years, that'd be good.
Yeah, that'd be great. That'd be a great option to have a guy that's winds up being successful and catch him early, because then you get loyalty at that point.
Yeah, I think nobody sees the field better than a quarterback, and that's typically why they make good coaches, at least in my opinion.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Now I know when we were talking off air, you mentioned a former Terp that joined the staff. Tell us about him.
Yeah. Yeah, we got defensive line coach Delbert Calcett actually was playing there my first game going to the Terps. So he played from 96 to 99, played under Ralph Friedgen and Locksley at that time. So he knows his work very well since he coached him through college. He played a little bit in the NFL, played a little bit in the Arena League while that was kicking. And he recently held the same defensive line head coaching position at Albany.
Nice. Well, as we know, last Wednesday was National Signing Day. I think the Terps are playing a little bit behind the eight ball, I'd say, with everything the university has kind of gone through and endured and all the changes and everything. But still, I think Locksley and his staff were still able to manage some exciting recruits in a short amount of time. If you had to look at the recruits that they were able to sign and some of the transfers that we were able to get, who are some of the guys that you're most excited to see?
So I was happy yesterday. I am ecstatic today.
Breaking
news.
Yeah. The breaking news today. Maybe people seen a few hours ago, but it's pretty breaking for us.
Yeah.
Ryan called me at work on this, by the way. He's just saying, he called me, did you see the news? Did you see the news?
That's so great.
Nick Cross is a 4-star safety out of Dematha Catholic. Dematha Catholic is a hotbed for talent.
Yes, it is.
We brought over Elijah Brooks, their head coach, for the last decade. He's our running backs coach now, so he is dragging some talent with him this year.
Nice.
Hopefully next year.
Good.
So he's 6 foot, 206, number 4 safety in the country, number 55 overall, and the number 1 player in Maryland.
There it is.
Number 1 player in Maryland.
There it is.
I'll take it, man. I'll take it all day.
Yeah. Absolutely. And I know another kid out of Maryland, or kid local ties anyway, that I know you were really excited with, was a 4-star wide receiver out of Upper Marlboro. Tell us a little bit about him.
Yeah, Mr. Isaiah Hazel, 6'1", 190. He was originally committed to WVU, so another feather in Locksley's cap to be stealing from a pretty good program. He had offers from Alabama, which was obviously a Locksley offer, so that helped bring him along. He had offers from Clemson. So, you got offers from both national championship teams, and he's coming to the Terps.
I love it.
Recruiting chops.
Dropping back to Cross for a second, wasn't he originally committed to FSU?
Yeah, Cross was originally committed to FSU. He was rumored for Maryland once he didn't sign an early signing day.
Right.
And then the biggest thing with Cross is he didn't sign during, regular signing day on February 6th, which meant that after the dead period on Thursday, every school in the nation with an open scholarship slot could offer him, and he was the only player in the top 100 that hadn't signed. So really, Locksley beat out every college in the country for this kid.
That's freaking awesome, man. That's awesome.
Well,
Good.
I would say I know there was another. You know, Piggy. We expect Piggy to be the starter this year for the Terps at QB, but there was a pretty decent QB dual QB threat that we picked up. From what I understand, he's a pretty big guy, like 6'2", 205, right?
Yep, Lance LeJean, 4-star dual threat quarterback out of Louisiana. Not usually our hotbed for recruiting, but right. I got the trip down south for Loxley, helped out with that.
Nice trip to New Orleans.
He had offers from everybody, FSU, Georgia, Bama, Miami, Texas A&M, everybody.
Yeah, I think that was, for me, the most exciting pick. I mean, obviously a quarterback is the most crucial part to any football team. And, you know, as high as I was on Kasim Hill kind of coming out of high school, I liked what I saw out of Kasim Hill in high school. It just didn't equate at the collegiate level. You know, he got hit quite often and really just seemed a bit timid on the football field even before the injury. What's your take on Kasim Hill?
Yeah, I mean, Kasim Hill coming out of a high school was listed as a pro-style quarterback. That's right. Not how we saw him used at Maryland. He was definitely very athletic, but he obviously wasn't comfortable. The first ACL was a freak accident. You know, I watched it. It was literally like 40 feet in front of my seats to watch him go down. But the next ACL this year, he looked timid. He looked, you know, kind of gun-shy. Was going in half speed, and that's a real good way to get hurt when you got guys coming at you full speed. So he's a real class act. He entered the transfer portal, but not till after signing day, because he said in his own words he didn't want it to affect Loxley's recruiting class, that it wasn't a comment on anything going on at Maryland. He just wanted to keep his options open. And it makes sense because he's going to have to sit out next year with the injury anyway, so if you transfer, you sit out, and you'll be healed.
And I tip my cap to him on that. I mean, to make that move and be that's a veteran style move, you know, to kind of say I'm gonna put my potential old team first,
right?
And let them kind of go about their business.
It's a mature move for sure.
It's a very, very mature move. There was, you know, speaking of him getting hurt and not being able to do it. I know, Fred, there was a guy that you were kind of looking at that you wanted to bring up to Ryan to see what he thought about it.
Well, yeah, so there was an interesting prospect out there that I saw that the Terps ended up getting, a guy that may help protect the quarterback a little bit, but this kid brings a little something extra to the university. Why don't you tell everybody a little bit about Paris Health, or Heath?
Yeah, Paris Heath, 3-star JUCO out of ASA in Brooklyn, New York. 6'4", 325.
Big boy.
He's our offensive guard. Number 8 offensive guard. Now, that's not national rankings with the high schoolers. They actually started ranking the transfers separately this year. So he's 150 transfer out of JUCO in the U.S., number 8 guard transfer, and number 3 out of New York. So it's still pretty good. And we expect him to play because he's already used his red shirt. He's got 3 years to play 3 years.
All right.
Okay. That's a good add.
And a kid that we can't not mention because he has a very familiar name. A name that doesn't really typically ring well here in Baltimore.
Ugh, I don't know, vomit.
The last name is Tomlin. Tell us about Dino Tomlin. What's he going to bring to the table?
Well, Dino Tomlin, first of all, thank you, Dino Tomlin, for committing to University of Maryland when the sky was falling. This kid committed in mid-November. We didn't know who the coach was. It was like when we said, when we said Matt Canada was taking over and then Matt Canada was stepping back. It was all in the middle of the hot mess of this season was. And he committed. Apparently his uncle played or at least went to Maryland. So this kid apparently has wanted to go to Maryland his whole life because there was no reason to commit. He had offers again. He had offers from Penn State and Boston College.
Wow.
Not Alabama. That was a misspeak. But Penn State and Boston College are still two schools to beat out.
Yeah,
Penn
State's probably 6'1", 165.
big wide receiver, big enough wide receiver.
Yeah, I mean we talked about this. You know, you and I have talked about it a lot off camera. Loxley is a thorn in Penn State's side, like nobody's business. I think already
I'll take this one, I'll take that one, yeah. I'll take that one.
Already reaping the benefits, which is huge.
And this year, Florida State, man, he stole Nick Cross and Lance LeJean.
Yeah, that's great.
To Florida State.
That's huge.
They're not happy with Maryland right now.
All right, well, let's talk a little bit about a couple of transfers. I know there were a couple of really talented prospects that have Maryland roots that are getting transferred here to the university. Tell us a little bit about them and when we might actually see them hit the field.
All right. So a big one that we might see earlier than later is Sean Savoy. He's a wide receiver. He was at Virginia Tech, three-star out of D.C. Had a big freshman year, breakout season. He actually had a 9 receptions for 139 yards and a 53-yard TD. And the reason you might be able to see him and not have him sit out is, unfortunately, that day is his brother was shot after that game in D.C.
Wow.
So, and then apparently there's been reports that his mother's ill also, so he could get a hardship clause to play this year. I'm not sure that's how they're going to play it, because I think this is a 2-year rebuild for Loxley. Right. I think he might let him sit this year, and when they have all their pieces next year, have him on the field. But if they wanted him here this year, they could get that done, I'm sure.
Yeah, no, the other guy that I wanted to bring up was a guy that 4-star defensive end out of Ohio. This guy's a big boy, but he's a solid build at 6'5", 280. Tell us a little bit about Booker, man.
Oh, Booker. Anthony Booker is a high school player out of Ohio. You're right, 6'5", 280. I thought you were leaning transfer again, so you threw me off.
Oh, my bad.
So, yeah, 6'5", 280. The big thing with this kid that I thought found shocking in my research is he ran track in high school. You got some wheels to be 6'5", 280 and running track.
That is impressive, man.
Yeah. So he'll at least play the 4-game red shirt. I mean, you'll see almost everybody. That's the new thing in college football. So they can play up to 4 games without burning a year of eligibility. So you gotta learn to work that rule, and we'll see him at least 4 games. If the record looks pretty good, maybe he'll keep playing.
All right. Well, there was another thing that I wanted to bring up about some potential late signings. Obviously, Nick Cross was originally on our list, and pun intended, I can cross him off.
Right.
Yeah, there it is.
That was a good one, see? Yeah.
Well done, Scott.
But are there any guys that you see that could potentially be a solid terp?
Terp,
you know where I'm going with this.
All around terp where we're going here. So we obviously Nick Cross is going to be the most for our conversation in this, but he's off the board and he's all locked in. I like that. So Gerald Drumgoole, 3-star tight end out of New York. 6'5", 195. You can't teach height. It's not that exciting usually to think that you're going to steal a late tight end, 3-star. But we are his only Power 5 offer. He hasn't accepted yet. I think the reason is because he also has some offers in the basketball realm. He's a 3-star small forward as well, and has an offer on the table from Mark Turgeon. So mind working over here. If the football's got a lot more scholarships to offer, we can throw a bone to the basketball team, put him on scholarship, let him be a preferred walk-on onto the basketball team, and have ourselves a nice 2-sport athlete.
Well, I can tell you this, though. He's going to be seeing a lot of Turgeon if he doesn't put on some weight. 195 at tight end will not work at the Division I collegiate level. He's going to have to put on a good solid 25, 30 pounds in muscle if he wants to compete at the tight end position. But that's intriguing, man. I can't think of a dual sport athlete, football and basketball. Really, the last one that I can think of would be like Antonio Gates. But outside of him, there really aren't very many.
It's few and far between in today's sports industry. It's few and far between because guys. I mean, Russell Wilson comes to mind. I actually just saw the video of him today when he was with the Yankees
right
there at spring training.
Well, with everything that's happened. And now kind of knowing what this 2019 class is going to look like with the transfers and the signings and all of that, what do you think would be a fair expectation for Loxley and this team for this upcoming season?
Well, based on recent past, it all depends on quarterback health. You know, if we can keep Piggy healthy or even Lance LeJean is still healthy, then, you got to expect 6 wins. You got to expect a bowl game appearance. We were 1 2-point conversion from getting at Ohio State, or we blew the game versus Temple. That should have never happened. Either one of those changed, and we're bowling last year. So right. Those are kind of my expectations this year.
2-point conversion away from that, man. Ugh.
Against one of the top teams in the country.
It's your fault.
It was a great game.
My fault.
Of the 20 years I was there, it is the best loss I've ever seen. A few wins were over there for me, but that renewed my – excitement, that high I got being there at Maryland, because I've been bored for a little bit.
Ryan, just so you know, I blame Fred because he was wearing Ohio State underneath of his Maryland.
Go Bucks. Yeah. Look, I'm a Buckeye and a Terp fan, man. I come by it honestly. My father was born in Columbus, Ohio, so it's not just I picked a winner. I have it in my blood. Buckeyes and Terps.
All right. Well, okay. So if a bowl game is kind of a must after success after last year, during the debacle that was last year, because let's be honest, off the field, that's completely what it was. Who are the guys that you that can get us there? Like, give us your way too early record prediction and give us the guys that are going to get us to that record.
All right, well, first I want to go with one more recruit that's going to get us there. He's definitely playing. Yeah, Sam Okai-Yinonu. Had to look at that one a little bit to get that in.
Strong. So,
three-star JUCO DN, Community College of Virginia in Minnesota. So it's northern Minnesota is actually where he played. 6'3", 270. And he has some unreal stats. He's a number 9 DN transfer. He had 21.5 tackles for loss, including 17.5 sacks.
Damn.
You can play against middle schoolers, and that's putting in work.
Yeah, so that's huge.
See a lot of him. You know, he's not going to get that in the Big Ten, but if we can get 8-9 sacks out of the kid, I'll be super ecstatic.
Now, you mentioned Elijah Brooks coming over as the running back coach for the Terps. A running back that he's awfully familiar with and a guy that put up some serious numbers last year and a guy that personally I think might make a run for the Doak Walker Award this year, Ant McFarland. Tell us what your take is on Anthony McFarland and do you see him taking us to that next level?
I hope so. Anthony McFarland showed all the tools last year. Anthony McFarland and Lorenzo Harrison both played running back for Elijah Brooks.
Ah, right.
So we're going to see him try to get the most out of both those boys again. You saw in the Ohio State game, he's like the number one reason we were in that game, and that's against some of the best competition out there. He's a multi-tool back, can catch the ball, can get yards after the catch, yards after contact, and he is fast as all get out.
All right, we did have one question come in on Facebook here, and I'm curious your take on this. Paul Jackson asks, will Loxley run a more pro-style offense or a typical college-style offense? What is your take on that?
I think you're going to see the college-style offense that he had at Alabama. You're going to see the run-and-gun, misdirection-type offense he had down there, and I think he's starting to get the tools to do it.
Okay, right. Good. Nice.
Fair enough.
What do you think, just out of curiosity, what do you think ultimately, like, Loxley's, like, ultimate goal or what he can really, truly bring to this program? I know a lot of people have talked about the recruiting. Do you think that's the biggest thing, or do you think it's the style of play that he comes out of Alabama?
So my long-term goal for the Terps, I feel like, is pretty realistic. I want to compete for third place. That's what I want to do. I want to compete behind the Ohio State and the Michigan. I want to be in that Michigan State, Penn State mix. You know, that's my goal for Maryland, and I think that's realistic, especially with the 2020 class that we have is a historic in this area.
Well, before we move on to basketball, I'm going to hold your feet to the fire for a second, Ryan. I need a prediction out of you. What do you think this team's record is 2019?
By the way, this is on the record. Remember that.
We are live.
It seems like a cop-out. 2019, 6-6. We go bowling.
Okay.
2020, though, I'll go on the record. Will you save this snippet? We're getting 10 wins. It might include the bowl win.
Ooh. 10 wins. Yeah, I will say 2020 is an exciting recruiting class coming in. A lot of guys, especially locally, that look – to fit the mold and look like they could be Terps in the future, man. I'm excited for this.
There's a few guys locally up our way that are looking pretty good.
Yeah, man, for sure.
For sure.
2020 class could be legit for sure.
Yeah.
All right, let's move to men's basketball. We just got off an amazing win. We're going to talk about here in a minute that you were watching and we were watching before we went on air. But let's take a quick second to recap the game last week. We moved to, I think, 18-6.
We're 19-6 after the win.
19-6 after the win. We're 9-4 conference play. We beat Nebraska. Ryan, we beat them 60-45. I know you still watch. You know, you're huge into football. You're also very big into basketball. Did the Terps deserve this win at 60-45?
It was a sloppy game.
It was a sloppy game, but it was sloppy on both parts. And after watching what they did tonight, I obviously won't foreshadow that. I think a lot of that had to do with the Terps figuring out how to play defense all of a sudden.
Right. I think a lot of what we're seeing out of the Terps and what's making them successful, and even in this game against Nebraska, is their domination on the boards. Like, this team, week in, week out, they are consistent on the boards. Bruno Fernando in this game against Nebraska had 19 rebounds. Jalen Smith, 11 rebounds. This is what we've seen against some of the smaller teams, that duo of Jalen Smith and Bruno Fernando down low dominating the boards.
Yeah, but they could get it out and they couldn't hit a shot to save their life. 37.9% from the field. Are you kidding me?
Yeah, it was pretty bad. But look, Nebraska shot 21% as well. So,
well, but I mean, you that's why I said, Ryan, do you really think at 37.9% field goal percentage from the field, do you really think they deserve to win this game?
They were exhausted from playing all that defense.
Right.
All right.
Put a lot of that. I put a lot of that field goal percentage on Anthony Cowan in that game. He has just struggled over the last couple
of
weeks.
Didn't he play something like 34 minutes in this game?
Yeah, he played 34 minutes.
He always plays 34 minutes.
Right. But he went 2 for 10 from the field, 0 for 4 from three-point. He was only 1 for 3 in his free throw shots. I mean, I don't know if it's mental for this kid, but, you know, this is your leader. And this, honestly, in my opinion, I think this team rides high or dies quickly based on Anthony Cowan. He's got to produce in order for this team to be successful. What's your take on Cowan?
Yeah, you can't have Cowan getting those kind of stats in that amount of time. So he still has the assists. He's still a good leader. Obviously, he's the only real veteran on the team. But you can't have those points out of him.
Right. I agree. But a guy that you're really high on and have been high on all year, Eric Ayala, in this game, had a pretty
struggle to say
average game, I'd say. 2 for 6 from the field, 2 for 4 from three-point land. He's a guy that, again, boom or bust so far this year. He's either had some really good games or he's just kind of disappeared, a la Jalen Smith, same kind of mold. You think this has anything to do with them being freshmen, or do you think that that's just them based on the talent that they're playing around?
I mean, he's the most collected freshman I can ever remember. He looks like an old soul playing that game. He's never flustered. Looks like he's moving in slow motion when he's dribbling the ball down the court, and yet nobody ever takes it from him.
Right.
I've been huge on Eric Ayala since the beginning of the year. I haven't made a claim to Fred that obviously will never happen. That he's going to take
Cowan's starting spot. Let's get this recorded on air. What was the claim?
I said that Anthony Cowan would be riding the bench and Eric Ayala would be the starting point guard.
How did that work out for you?
Has been taking point, but Cowan's still on the field or on the court.
Yeah, that did not work out very well for you.
Nah, they'll never put Cowan on the bench. You can't do that with your veteran leadership, but. Man, Eric Ayala's got a sweet stroke. Him and Aaron Wiggins have a higher percentage from three-point than they do on the regular field goal percentage.
Interesting comment from Bryce on Facebook, by the way. I think this is in reference to Cowan, saying he's not mellow and they try to play him the same way. That's an interesting comment considering, I mean, when you look at it for face value, exactly as Bryce said, they kind of are playing a very similar style to what they would play when Mello was there.
Yeah, he definitely models his play after him, but it doesn't always work. He has some of the same big shots. We watched him hit that last second three.
Right.
Into the side by side frames. It was almost the exact same.
Right.
And he has Melo-esque tendencies, but he's not Melo.
Yeah, I felt like Melo thrived in those roles. He wasn't the guy that kind of buckled under pressure. He thrived as the game kind of went on and stepped up in big situations. A lot like Gravis Vasquez in that kind of context. Not the same player, but as far as thrived in those pressure situations. Yeah, I don't think Cowan is that type of player at all.
Another thing that kind of hurt them, Ryan, I'd be curious to get your take on this. 50% for three free throws. Seriously?
Yeah, that's unlike the Maryland Terrapins. I guess you have that game every once in a while. But, I mean, even Bruno Fernando is shooting a good percentage from free throw. You don't usually see that from your dominant center. So, the overall, as a team, they usually do pretty well. But that game was definitely a misstep.
Well, let's move on a little bit to tonight's game. A big game. And in my opinion, I was at Brady Kemp is in the room and in the house listening to the show. We talked about it earlier. This is, in my opinion, this was a must-win game. Terps get it done at home against Purdue. Unfortunately, we didn't get a chance to watch a whole lot of the game because we were prepping for the show. But I know you did. You got to watch it down to the last second.
Down on the last wire, and he's sitting there listening to it and watching it as we're prepping for the show and telling us what's going on.
What was your take on this game, man? I know it was a kind of sloppy first half. Terps were down by 8 going into halftime. But, man, did things change in the second half?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, the Purdue player, help me out with his name, was outstanding.
God, what's the guy's name? You got this.
Is it Edwards?
Edwards.
Yes.
Edwards was absolutely unbelievable. I thought we were going to get absolutely destroyed. I thought he was going to tear us apart. That first half made me real nervous. So give him all the credit in the world because we played great defense on him all game, and he didn't care. He shot right over the arms. He shot right with the ball in his face. But the Terps were behind, I think it was 8 at the half after a ridiculous 3-point shot at the buzzer, and then played the best defense ever. I think they only allowed 18 points in the second half. Could you check me on that? Something crazy.
Yeah, I think they went into halftime with 38. They ended up the game with 56. So, yeah, 18 points.
18 points. That's unbelievable.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Maryland has been playing good defensive basketball. It's just their shooting has been what's killed them and not being able to shoot consistently enough. Part of that plays, I think, that they take 4 shots too often. They don't set a lot of pick and rolls. They don't do anything to get the ball down low. It drives me crazy. You've got one of the best big men in college basketball, and you don't use him to his strengths.
He went 4 for 4 tonight, 12 points, but they spread the ball around tonight. Jalen Smith had 16, Ayala had 15, Cowan had 12, and Wiggins off the bench had 11. Huge there. Without Wiggins, this is a lot closer game at that point. Wiggins off the bench, that's huge at that point. And I know we've talked about him in the past about how he can come off the bench and be a force to be reckoned with. I'm curious, what is your take on Wiggins and how he plays his game at coming off the bench?
Yeah, I mean, we have a two-man argument at sixth man of the year. I mean, you've got Ricky Lindo playing the defense and the high energy guy, and then you got Wiggins that's coming off the bench and little tight shorts like Ricky Lindo. but the boy can play basketball. And then you got Aaron Wiggins that's giving us that offensive spark off the bench. You know, we obviously got some other people that play off the bench, but those two are the ones in the argument for sixth man of the year.
Yeah, and that was going back to the beginning of the year. I think one of our frustrations, we talked about this off the air, was they didn't really seem to have a good rotation in the beginning of the season. You could see a lot of the starters were getting gassed later on in games. Well, it seemed like as they kind of hit their stride, where, you know, at one point Terps won 7 games in a row, they had a really good rotation going on. We saw them kind of get away from that a little bit. The Terps, again, start to struggle and get gassed, and they start struggling in some of these games. Tonight, did you see a good rotation of players in this game?
Well, the beginning of the game was so hectic. Both teams were gassed. Everyone but Edwards on Purdue didn't look like they could handle it. Even Cowan, who plays unbelievable minutes, already looked gassed in the first half. But the second half was much better. There was a good rotation. You saw a lot of Wiggins. You saw a lot of Lindo. You saw the other Smith. I don't know why
Smith
I'm
Jr.
missing that name.
Yeah, Smith Jr.
So you saw a nice little rotation. I don't know where some of our bench players from last year have gone. Tomajic was a guy that I really thought was going to do something big this year because he showed hot streaks last year, and he's been the witness protection program. Only seen him a couple minutes this year. But we definitely have some good bench play from our freshmen.
All right. So now with the win against Purdue, Terps are at 19 wins on the year. They've got a tough schedule coming up here to finish out the year. The next six or I think six games left on the schedule. They've got a really tough schedule. I know that they're going to be playing Michigan twice. They've got a game against Michigan State. They've got who else they got on their schedule?
I'm pulling it up now.
I know they've got Ohio State, which should be a win.
It's Michigan, Iowa, Ohio State, Penn State, Michigan again at Michigan. The first one's is at home, or I'm sorry, the first one's at Michigan. The second one's at home, and then Minnesota at home to finish out the season.
Yeah, we dodged Michigan State twice this year. We only have to play them once. Unfortunately, right. We lost that.
Right. So what do you feel this team could be looking like positioning-wise for the tournament coming late this year?
I mean, I think we've pretty much sealed our tournament berth with this Purdue win.
Yeah.
I mean, if we straight lost out and lost first round of the Big Ten, I guess there could be an argument. But you're talking, you know, 19, 20 wins in the Big Ten. It's going to be really hard to keep us out with as highly ranked as the program or the conference is right now.
Do you see this team getting a bye, the double bye in the Big Ten tournament? Do you see them playing that good down the stretch?
I mean, it's going to be hard to get in that top four. We were floating there for a right. while, but you're going to have to definitely take out Ohio State again, which, you know, is definitely possible. You might have to beat Michigan at home, which can be a tall order, but
yeah.
you know, it's all going to be on the line at that point. Cause that's the second to last game of the year, I think. So right. you'll know what's sitting in front of you.
So yeah. So question if flat out, outside of the Iowa, Ohio State, Penn State, Minnesota, if you beat Michigan twice to end out the season, do they get the double bye? Yes or no?
Oh, yeah. If you beat Michigan twice, I think that you also beat a bunch of those other teams. You're going to get double bye. But if we sweep Michigan, I'll be pretty ecstatic. You'll see me doing cartwheels.
Look, I am too. They're number six in the country, so I think the problem that we've kind of discussed off air is Bruno Fernando with his foul trouble. Do you see that playing a factor in the Michigan game?
Well, I think it's already playing a factor in what Fred was saying. I tried to call you Phil. That was interesting.
I am a Donahue.
I think that the pick and roll was kind of changed by his foul trouble, because if you watch Bruno set screens now, he absolutely 100% of the time rolls out of the way before the guy gets to him. He never allows.
I've noticed that.
Yeah.
He's not picking up any cheap fouls because he's bigger and stronger than the guy running into him at full speed and letting the ref make a decision call. So he rolls right out of the way as soon as they're close to him.
That's awesome, man. Ryan Schammel, appreciate you coming on the show, man. This was a lot of fun. We got to do this more in the future.
Yeah, man. I tell you what.
You're going to be our resident Terp expert.
We're going to have a little bit of fun with this off air. Anybody can ask any questions. When we move to after our last call, after our two-minute warning and our outro, I think Ryan stays on here and people can ask him whatever the heck they want.
I like it, man.
Are you cool with that, Ryan?
I'm down for it.
All right, man.
Let's go for it. Let's go for it now.
Minute warning.
All right, Fred.
Yes, sir.
This week, sir, it is your chance of the 2 minute warning. Ryan, just for the record, he has 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 things. I'm saying he's getting through 5.
I like to be clear in what I say. I don't like to just speed race through all these things.
That's what the two-minute warning is all about, is you speed race. It is the two-minute offense. All right. Let's go.
On your marks.
On your mark. Fred, your time on the two-minute warning starts meow.
All right. Adding to the drama in the Steel City, Steelers wide receiver Antonio Brown has requested a trade from the team And what was a dramatic season for the nine-year vet, it seems his days in Pittsburgh may be numbered. Let's not forget, this guy has posted six straight seasons with 100 receptions, the longest streak in NFL history. He's got 837 receptions, their most through 130 career games in NFL history, and his 9,145 receiving yards over the last six seasons are the most in a six-season span in NFL history. This guy can still ball. Where does he end up? We'll see. We'll see if the Steelers can work this thing out. Multiple sources have told ESPN that the Houston Texans will release wide receiver Demaryius Thomas. The eight-year vet is due a non-guaranteed $14 million salary in 2019, but looks as though that's not going to happen after he tore his Achilles in December, ending his season. Many are asking if he'll be able to fully return as the 31-year-old tries to recover from this serious injury. We'll see what happens there. Ole Miss is taking the final steps to rid themselves of the ineligible players controversy that surrounded the team. The actions of former head coaches Hugh Freeze and Houston Nutt are causing the team and the university to vacate a total of 33 wins from their records. The vacated wins span six seasons from 2010 through 2016. And what has to be the biggest NFL news of the week, the Cleveland Browns have inked a deal with running back Kareem Hunt. This comes despite his off-the-field issues and case surrounding domestic violence. Browns GM John Dorsey addressed the controversial deal on Monday, stating that the organization will have a zero-tolerance policy on Hunt. Pretty ironic considering you have zero-tolerance policy, but you give a guy who shoved and kicked a woman a chance. One plus one is two. Two plus one is not. It's kind of weird. Per Sporting News reporter Amir Tyree, the NBA is denying reports that they threatened to fine the New Orleans Pelicans.
Oh,
wow.
You didn't even get through
five. I got through four. I got through four and a half. God.
Ryan, did
Fred,
I call
you're
it?
Too slow.
Apparently. The old age will slow you down.
We'll get you walking again.
I love it.
Bunch of jerks.
Oh, man. Well... Guys, we appreciate everybody tuning in this week. We've got plenty of people that are still on all of our
stay
social
tuned
media platforms.
For the after show.
Stay tuned for the after show. You can ask Ryan any question you want. It's an open book. You can ask Fred and I any questions you want. It's an open book. Make sure you stay tuned.
Get all the questions for Ryan.
Exactly. As always, you can check us out on our website, www.birdlandbs.com. You can check us out there. You can check out Fred, myself, our other co-host, Ryan, who's on occasionally as well. You can check each of us out. Or contact us. Get our Birdland BS gear, which I am proudly wearing every week. And Fred has me wear my hat so I don't have a glow on the...
keep that glare off the forehead.
Yeah, keep glare down. www.birdlandsports.com. There's enough content for you there every day of the week. We're there with other podcasters and writers. It's for fans, by fans. Follow Birdland BS on social media accounts. Birdland BS, at Fred BLBS, at Scott BLBS. We are also on the Big Play Network, bigplay.com, and the Big Play app. You can't forget about that. Check it out. Download it. You'll get all of your local news as well as national news. Check it out when you get the chance. If you want your opinion or topic heard, use the hashtag BLBS Nation, hashtag Playmakers. Both of those we pay attention to. We'll try and get your comments here on the show. And as always, be sure to check out the audio version of the podcast on Spotify, iTunes, Google Podcasts, and any podcast app of your choice. We are still working on iHeartRadio. Stay tuned for that. As always, we want to thank everybody for tuning in. We want to thank Ryan Schammel for joining us this week as our Terps expert, as we are now going to call him, because the man knows his stuff.
That's right.
We appreciate you joining us, Ryan. We'll be back next Tuesday night, 8:45 for Birdland BS. I'm Scott.
I'm Fred.
See you guys.
See you.